episode 6 of WEC Podcasts. We are today going to be discussing an unknown question or questions to see how we think about things. I'm Kelly.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Katie.
I'm Mandy.
And today's question is going to be coming from Kevin.
This is a very simple question, but I'm sure it's going to provide a lot of dialogue. Name your all-time favorite villain.
Ooh.
TV show, movie, book, doesn't matter.
Ooh.
And as you guys are thinking, I'll just spitball my own idea. One of my favorite villains, if not the favorite villain, is Hans Gruber from Die Hard.
Oh my gosh, that's a great
played by Alan Rickman. There are a few villains I've seen in a movie that make me just kind of really want to watch the villain part of the movie. I couldn't care less about the Bruce Willis character in times when I'm rewatching Die Hard, but watching Alan Rickman do that part is—it's such a pleasure to see him do it because I fell in love with Alan Rickman in that role. And so every role he's played after that, I'm like, yes, I want to see him do that. But just the way he does that is, it shows how I feel. You can have a great hero, but if you don't have a great villain, the story is going to fall apart. And in Die Hard, the villain is so meaty, I think. And Alan Rickman does it so well that it's interesting to see all of his scenes, and it's also much more threatening when he does something violent or evil or
because
whatever.
He's so charming, and he has
yeah.
a sense
exactly.
of humor.
And there's a yeah. there's a dichotomy between kind of the sweetness sometimes he has between the violent episodes that he has, and also spoilers for anybody who hasn't seen
and
Die
shame
Hard.
Shame on you for not
yeah,
seeing Die Hard.
If you haven't seen Die Hard, yeah.
And it's been almost 30 years.
Yeah, so
oh,
so
no.
up yours.
It's 80s, right?
Yeah, I guess yeah. so.
It was like, what, 85, 86?
That would be oh 30 God. Years.
Yeah, so, but I mean, there's a scene, I mean, there are several scenes. One where he's being really nice and trying to get any information from the head of a corporation. And you
Nakatomi
Nakatomi Plaza, mm-hmm. and the Nakatomi Corporation, and the resolution of that one scene is such a shock. You're like, holy crap! He goes from kind of like slimy but cool to holy crap, he means business.
Yeah.
And then there's another scene where he goes from where he's looking for Bruce Willis's character. And actually, he's looking for the reason why explosives aren't working or something. And then Bruce Willis sees him. And he completely shifts his personality on the spot to fool Bruce Willis's character. And it's such a beautiful scene to me. The fact that Alan Rickman was able to pull that off believably, because he affects an American accent. As far as I know, it's an American accent. And he it's just such a joy to see that, and any other actor doing that part, it doesn't matter. I mean, somebody more famous could have done it, and probably could have done it effectively, but I think Alan Rickman knocked that one out of the park.
I think it's the actor, mm-hmm. because I can think of three examples where Alan Rickman played a villain, and I cared more about the villain than anyone else. Mm-hmm. That role. The other one is Prince of Thieves. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I loved him, is when he was the sheriff.
Right. I'm canceling Christmas.
But I felt for him. I felt so bad for him when he was truly a horrible human being.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was really able to do that. And I think that's his acting skill.
Yeah.
Though the sheriff isn't my favorite villain. Just...
Yeah, oh, in the cartoon, he's very fun. But the other thing, Die Hard was probably my first action movie that I went to see in the theater and came out. And it was, I think, without Alan Rickman playing Hans Gruber so well, like how he did, Bruce Willis's character, which I can't even remember the name of, John McClane, would have come off a little cartoony.
Oh, really
yeah.
cartoony.
Because... But because you had this person playing this villain so believably that you really, it was a nice balance. Mm-hmm. And it was go, rah, rah, this is stupid, but you're going to do it because even though, yeah, no, I agree. Alan Rickman was extraordinary. And as you were talking, it helped me answer my own question because I panicked when you asked the question because I'm like one of those people that immediately...
That's why I wanted to start first. Yeah,
I went through like every possibility and then I was like, wait a minute, why are you even questioning? You know who your favorite villain is.
I have a funny feeling your favorite villain is going to be my favorite villain.
Well, before you talk about that, I did want to mention that the beauty of Alan Rickman in that particular part is... the fact that he has such swagger in that role, I think, and that every time all of the other kind of minor villains that are helping the Hans Gruber out, every time they start to panic, Hans Gruber is like, I got this covered. The FBI, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. This guy, this is a guy who knows what he's doing. He's never rattled. He doesn't get rattled even after he finds out that there's a cop loose in the building. He's like, we'll just dust him off.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even start to get rattled until maybe the last third of the movie.
And it's a villain in that space that wasn't a physical threat. Mm-hmm. Like, if they were to get into a fist fight, John McClane would win.
Yes.
But he was winning on wit.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that was very threatening.
Cunning. He was winning on, intelligence. And that did a lot for me in my choice of favorite villain. I own Die Hard, and I will literally skip forward past all of the Bruce Willis scenes just to see the Hans Rickman scene.
Getting his, putting his feet in the... I was like, why are you putting your feet
on the glass? Yeah. Oh, on the carpet, right.
Feet on the glass. That was really sorry. Anyways.
Making fists with your toes. That's what you're talking about.
So who is your favorite villain?
Snape.
Oh, no, that's not mine. That's Snape
because of Alan Rickman. I thought you were saying the obvious for a reason. So now I understand.
Yeah, mine is Snape. And I think for me to truly love a villain... I need to feel their emotions, and it has to be, I have to feel something more for them than hate. And Snape was such a, both in the movies and in the books, such a layered,
yes.
You never knew what his motivation was. And when you're sure he's just the most horrible human being, and it turns out he's really not. And he has multiple motivations, and he was so in depth that I loved him, and I loved Alan Rickman playing his character.
I was so glad when they cast Alan Rickman in that role. And I wondered if he knew how glad we all were that he got that. I can't imagine anybody else playing that.
And it's one of those situations. Okay, this is a spoiler, so maybe if you don't want to be spoiled about Harry Potter, once again, shame on you.
Yes. If you haven't seen all the Harry Potter movies by now, and
just read the books.
Tune out for like 20, 30 seconds. Reading that scene where he's dying and he asks to look into Harry's eyes choked me up.
Oh, I know.
And then to have them show that on the movie and have it be so close to what I thought, it was heartbreakingly beautiful.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, have you seen, and I don't know who put it out, but they took all of Snape's scenes from all of the movies and put them in chronological order.
Oh my God.
I haven't seen that.
Incredible.
Where is that, on YouTube?
Yeah, I saw it on Facebook, so okay. It's probably hooked to YouTube, but it really does go from when he's a child and playing with Lily to when he goes through Hogwarts into being an adult into that last scene. It's amazing. And Alan Rickman is so good at doing all those parts. Well, the parts that he did. Obviously, he didn't play himself as a child, but all the other ones and just to see how it actually builds and makes sense. Because a lot of times when they do things out of order chronologically, if you put it in chronological order, it won't make sense. That makes sense.
Yeah. She's a phenomenal writer. The fact that she did that. She layered in all these things with that character that you didn't realize until the very end. And then when you go back and you reread it, it all makes sense.
Exactly.
There's one thing about villains that I've seen actors talk about in various interviews. Like, I remember, some people here haven't watched The Walking Dead, but there's a villain in The Walking Dead called The Governor, and he's played by a guy named David Morrissey. And David Morrissey was asked about this character, and the character of The Governor is a despicable character. And so he was asked in many interviews, how do you feel about playing a despicable character? And he's like, I'm not playing a despicable character.
Right.
I'm playing a guy who's trying to survive. And so the actor, a lot of actors play the villains exactly that way. They don't play them as bad guys. They play them as, now I can't say as much about Alan Rickman playing Hans Gruber, but Snape, I don't think was ever a bad guy. He was the foil, certainly the antagonist to Harry Potter, but he had a reason for being that.
Right, but if you don't know his motivation, which you don't know for the first three or four books,
and to Harry,
he's a villain. And to Harry, who's our hero, he is a villain.
If you don't know the background of Snape, if you don't know why he's acting the way he's acting, then you definitely think he's
there. Because in the first few books, he's just the villain, mm-hmm. and she lays that out very clearly.
But
he's not the villain. I mean,
he's one of the villains. Right.
I mean, they kind of make him the red herring, like, from the very start. The kids are constantly saying, Snape did this, Snape did that, what is Snape doing, what, all this. And then you find out it's not Snape, and then they're like, well, then who is it?
But one of the most heinous acts in the book, which, if you're back now, we won't spoil, but one of the most heinous acts in the book, he did commit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was saw it, but there was a good reason.
Why he did the worst thing that ever happened in the entire series.
Yeah, but they say that if you're going to create a villain, that your villain needs to feel that they're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
And exactly. So otherwise, it's not a compelling villain. And no matter what that absolutely right is, you have to kind of fill that in. And so as mm-hmm. you're creating it, you have to kind of feel that they're right and that... Because that's the way that I think most of these villains are created nowadays. I mean, not nowadays, but throughout all these different mediums, where the most compelling ones are the ones that just totally feel like they're doing the right thing.
Right. And also, they have to be doing the right thing for a logical reason. Mm-hmm. Having someone be insane and doing is not a good villain.
It's not as fun.
You need to have them be logical and really be able to work it out in your head, at least for me. I can work it out in my head, that makes sense, you're still a bad guy.
Well, I mean, okay, so that kind of brings up another character. And I don't know what either Mandy's or Katie's villains are, but that brings up the character of the Joker in the Dark Knight movie, because he is chaos. He exemplifies chaos in that movie, but I think it's the fact that he is chaotic and you do not know the lengths with which he's going to go that makes him a compelling villain. You don't know if he's insane or if he's calculated. You don't know if he's, you know, the fact that you don't know what lengths to which he will go to further his ends is what's scary about that character.
And that's a good lead into my favorite character, which, seriously, is just Loki.
Loki.
Of course.
Much of that is because it's a great character, and how much of it is because he's just pretty on the movie?
Tom Hiddleston.
Okay, first of all, it has a lot to do with Tom Hiddleston. But I honestly...
In the same way that... You know, Kevin's has to do with Alan Rickman.
But I also read the Loki comic book series. And I read it because that character is amazingly well done, because you do not know why. And even though he layers in, you know, I'm the second son and I'm out of place and I have all these angsty reasons, kind of these teenagey reasons why I'm doing this against my, you know, more powerful, better looking brother Thor. In the comic book, they go even further into this character, and basically they set up that there's old Loki, who has done horrible, horrible things, and basically has been kind of formed into this new Loki who wants to do the right thing, but can't do it.
Wow.
Like, at every like turn, he's forced into kind of making the wrong decision. And through a series of, I made the wrong decision here, I made the wrong decision here, and the last comic book in the series that's just been out, he's at the lowest. Pretty much all of his friends that he had worked so hard to get, saying, I'm new, I'm going to be better, I'm going to be better to my brother Thor, I'm going to be this, are gone. Wow. For all these reasons, and he's now at his darkest place, and you're going, oh, you poor fool. And yet, on the other hand, you want him to do bad things. You really do. I mean, that was what was so fun about the movies. Seeing Loki do crappy things, you were like, yay! It was a lot of fun. And so, yeah, part of it has to do with the fact that it's Tom Hiddleston, but he does such a good job at playing such a, what could, again, have been a cartoon. It's very complex. It's very this and that. And when it is, ends up being cartoony, when in the Avengers, when Hulk is smashing him into the ground and, you know, whatever, that's allowed to be cartoony because you've already set up the fact that it's such a great character by that point.
Well, one of my favorite scenes in the Avengers, the first Avengers movie, is when Loki is in Tony Stark's apartment.
Yeah.
And they have that little one-on-one kind of like verbal kind of battle because you know that Loki is going to do something at that point. And Tony Stark knows he's going to do something at that point. But Tony Stark has the swagger and the kind of confidence where he says things like, well, we have a Hulk, you know, that kind of thing. And Loki, it's just this, I love that kind of back and forth between the two because Tom Hiddleston brings it in that scene, I think.
He thinks he's doing the right thing. And, yeah. And because of this dichotomy of this character where he really, there's another comic book series that they're doing right now called Ms. Marvel, and it's this retelling of the generation of that particular superhero, and they're doing it in the form of a Pakistani teenager who is kind of surprised that she has this skill. And one
In the form of Loki?
No. It's comic book. They're redoing the character of Ms. Marvel. Because Ms. Marvel, Ms. Marvel morphed into Captain Marvel. And so now the Captain Marvel character, she's the one that, you know, has this lightning bolt across her chest, and she's a great character. So they kind of created a new Ms. Marvel, and it's a little teenager, and she's really funny. Kamala Khan, I think her name is. But the Valentine's Day comic book, of course, a bad guy comes, and who comes to save the day? Loki.
Wow.
And the origin of why he's there is very interesting. The fact that he ends up helping her defeat the bad guy was very interesting in how it was done. But it was very realistic because you've seen these two different sides of this character to the point where, I don't know if you saw the last Thor, Dark World.
Yes, I did.
So at the end, when you think that, and spoiler, when you think that he's doing the right thing, and spoiler again, it ends up that maybe he didn't. Or he had personal motivation, but in fact, his actions made it possible for the right thing to happen, and yet secretly he was working for himself. It's like, yay! I love those kind of characters.
But once again, like for me, because I love Loki, and I haven't read the comics, it's only the movie, but if you can make me feel sad for you and feel empathy for you, I'm in. And that scene when he finds out, when he's in prison, and he had the whole illusion, and then the illusion goes away. See, I'm trying to do it without spoilers. And the illusion goes away, and he's just sitting there. My heart broke. And even if I hadn't liked him before, though I have to admit before it's because he was pretty, but after that, it was, I will love that character forever because it made me feel something.
Right, because then you saw him as a son.
And yeah, he became human. Yeah.
But then are we really talking about villains? Because I have a villain for you.
Oh, good. Let's hear
it. Let's hear the
villain. A real villain? Are you saying that all of our villains suck? And
no, our villains are partially good.
No, but when you ask a question like that, I can't think of something that doesn't really come right to mind. But I was watching a movie last night. I only got through half of it, and of course this is the movie I've seen 40 times, but I couldn't help but start it. It was Aliens.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. You're talking about
Burke. So it's an alien. Okay, the villain is, you know, the alien. But no. There is a greater villain than the alien. The alien is just, you know, an animal. Okay. Doing what animals do.
I saw Aliens when it came out in the theater, and I think that's the only time I've seen it. Is Burke Paul Reiser?
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay, yes. I'm up to speed now.
Horrible,
and that
man.
Was kind of cool that they cast him, because at the time he was mainly known for a sitcom, very likable guy.
Actually, this is before the sitcom.
Was it before
the sitcom? It was before
the
sitcom, yes.
So what was he? He was a comedian.
He wasn't known for anything.
Maybe he was a comedian.
He was.
Yeah, so if you watched a lot... because I used to watch every stand-up special that was on. We had HBO, we had, you know, and so I watched all of them. So I'd seen him do stand-up a lot before.
Right, but he had no, like, regular series before this. So this was the biggest thing he had done up to that point.
Casting him in that role, you were blindsided.
It's very, and he's very convincing throughout, you know, he's staring her in the eye. She goes, "I'm only going there because we're going to destroy it, right?" And he goes, "Yes, of course, we're going to destroy it." Never his intention, of course. And he, so he plays basically, he represents a corporation. So he's your typical vilified corporate villain. But in the end, completely, that was one of the greatest moments in a movie when this villain gets it. And I remember just the entire theater just cheering, you know.
Well, I remember when
the alien did something right.
But one of the best scenes in that movie is when she's locked in that room because he locked her in there. That's one of the most stressful scenes and very well done. And that's when you just so hate. I never hated anybody.
But afterwards, when everything's resolved and they have him, and I think it's Bill Paxton's character says, let's just kill this guy right now. You're like, yes! I wanted this guy dead.
It was one of the ways that James Cameron brought these, you know, misfit band of characters that didn't know each other very well at the beginning, and he brought them, you know, one of the many ways that he brought them together as a tightly knit group where they're all kind of facing many things horrible, apparently.
Okay, so once again, I'm the dumb person who, like I said, haven't seen them forever. This is Kelly, so if you're going, who's the new person? Kelly. Did he lock the little girl up? Is that what he did?
He locked Sigourney, Ripley, and Newt into a room with one of the parasitic aliens.
Because he wanted them impregnated.
He wanted them to have an alien inside them when they were rescued.
Yeah, so the face hugger was loose in the room, and they couldn't get out of it.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
And there's actually a scene where Sigourney Weaver, this Ripley character, is like waving at a security camera, and Burke sees the video and turns off the camera and then turns around. Son of a bitch.
Yeah, to me, you were talking about Walking Dead and how the people were more dangerous, or the criminals. To me, that, you're right, that was it for me, because really it made it go from, you know, you're so scared about these aliens, and then you're just like, well, who else? Because obviously Burke
was... The thing is, he was making you think of Bishop, the android. Mm-hmm. And so throughout the whole movie, he's given you another guy as a potential villain.
Yeah. Right.
He was the villain in the first movie, so you're expecting, you know, and he's totally playing it up. I mean, you're thinking Bishop through... And who's the actor who plays Bishop?
Lance Henriksen.
Yes, oh my gosh. And he was just perfect. From the beginning, I was caught. I was like, oh, yeah, there's something. The way that he's looking at that parasite, oh, there's something wrong with him. Yeah.
He's a good actor. He was in another show that Chris Carter did.
Yeah,
that
television series.
Millennium.
I love that.
When everyone was nuts about, you know, Y2K and everything, so it was a perfectly timed one, too.
Yes.
But he's a very good actor.
Yeah.
You know,
this talk about who our favorite villains are, this totally brings to mind... I'm kind of a reading purist, and I love books and everything. But I think to get a really good villain for me, I think my favorite villains and stuff are ones I've actually seen in movies or TV.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think to have a really good villain, you need to have that nuance of the acting, to see the facial expressions, to see the different tones. And when I read, I don't get that as much. And I really think that helps build a good villain in my mind, is to actually see them do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Although, I mean, I was the one that came to my mind. I was thinking of in Hunger Games, the way that she wrote about the president, and she described, and they hadn't really put it in the movie yet, that how red his tongue is because of this, you know, his infection. And
are you talking about Snow?
Yeah, Snow.
Talking about Snow. Yeah. Although, when the actor did embody that character, Donald Sutherland.
Yeah.
He did bring it, the gravitas and the expressions, but I did have a I did see him in that book. I mean, he was frightening to me.
Yeah.
More frightening in the book than I thought in the movie.
See, I've only seen the first movie. I haven't seen Catching Fire or the first Mockingjay, but because in the first movie, I thought, it doesn't really compare to what I read in the book. I don't know if it gets, does it get better? I mean, does it get closer to the character of Snow in Catching Fire and Mockingjay?
We're getting there.
It's expanding to see, just tell you, because I don't, and I haven't read the book in a while, but I don't think he's a big part of the first book, is he? Am I totally off?
It's more when he starts interacting with her character.
Probably the biggest scene in the first movie, I only know this because I just saw it recently, was when he sits the game master down and basically says, Katniss is a problem. You're going to have to solve this problem.
Yeah, but I don't think that's in the book. I think that was, because a lot of the stuff that was the like control room and stuff, that's movie only.
No, it's not a control room. It was a thing where they were sitting out in some grassy field. Not field, but they were like overlooking the city. And the Game Master comes in for a little discussion. Mm-hmm. And President Snow says something about, you know, about hope. He talks about hope. And he says, basically tells the Game Master, you're going to have to quash their hope. Because that's hope leads to, I think he said, revolution.
Yeah.
And he gives a very veiled threat to the Game Master to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. And that's the only instance in the first movie where you see the kind of like venom in President Snow that in that entire movie. So I don't know if there is if the rest of the movies amp that up with that character.
Yeah. It expands. And I actually think they've expanded his role from what's in the book in the movies. I think they've given him more of a role.
Yeah. I'm sure there's a better example of a book that where some, but it might have been.
Well, what do you guys think about Voldemort?
In the book? Oh, good
well,
point.
To me though, he's so cartoony. I mean, I love those books, and I'm not saying this isn't a criticism, but to me, he's just so pure evil that. I don't know. I don't see.
Because I was really. For me personally, I love Ralph Fiennes. He's mm-hmm. a phenomenal actor, but I didn't like how they made him look. To me, right. It was much scarier in my head when I was reading those books.
And I think for I'm not an act. I've never acted, so unless I was trying to get out away with something, and that's a whole other story. but I think. Being an actor and having to wear all those prosthetics, I think that would be very difficult.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Because, you know, another, like, really famous villain is Darth Vader.
Oh, right.
And he's very popular, and I like Star Wars, and I like Darth Vader, but to me, he's not a great villain because there's nothing to him. I mean, I don't have any emotional tie to him.
The music.
The voice.
James Earl Jones.
Of course, he scared me from the time I was 5, so there's a different kind of fear associated with a Darth Vader when you're 5, maybe when you're an adult, but
that had extra things, like, because they couldn't have the facial, they had the sounds of the breathing, and
well, this, James Earl Jones,
I mean. Yeah, because, like, I saw it when I was 7, it was the first time I'd been to the theater with my parents, so excited, I come back, and my little sister, being, I guess, 3, had a Binky or Warwar. And I remember walking out.
I think we're the only ones that call
I don't know
War-War.
What that is. What?
Pacifier.
Okay.
And I know what we called it.
I've heard of Binky meaning a blanket.
No.
Oh, no. So it's a pacifier. But basically, when she would sleep, it would kind of sit halfway out. And I remember walking, it was like a couple nights after I saw the movie, walking into the hallway and just hearing. And I was like. Being 7 years old, just immediately, Darth Vader's in the house!
This 3-year-old Darth Vader.
This isn't a villain, but this is like a similar story, and this always makes me laugh. So, I was probably about 7, 8, and on TV we saw the remake, funny enough, with Donald Sutherland, of Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, God. So scary.
Okay, so I watched that movie, And like 2 days later, I go out. We have a plant in our kitchen, and it had a pod growing off of it that looks so similar to those seeds. I wigged out. It totally scared the heck out of me.
Yeah, that would do it.
You know, the Bert character, he plays a certain kind of role in movies. And I think after I saw that movie, I started looking for him. And you see him, that role of the character who betrays, that you think is good at the beginning and isn't good at the end. Do they have a name for that? For that
role?
Oh,
yeah, I'm sure they do.
Yes, but then that would give us an explicit rating if I told you.
Oh, there is a name. No.
A-hole.
It's kind of like the distraction, or there must have to be. It's like it's the
red herring.
They use it. Yeah, they use it in television a lot.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you could go to
procedurals
or a bait and switch.
You can go to TVtropes.com to find out the exact phrase.
Yeah, but you're right. That's what they. That's now very, very common, because you'll watch an episode of Castle. It's a perfect example of this. The first suspect is never the one. And the one you think it is not it. He's innocent. And it's not until the very last one where you're like, oh,
unfortunately, yeah. It's usually the actor that you recognize.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
You're like, why did that actor show up at the beginning? I've totally seen him in like 20 different things. And then at the end, oh, you're the reason why, because you're the murderer.
Okay, once again, not speaking, this isn't villains. But that thing about seeing someone who's famous, I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about Police Squad. Did you ever see that show?
Yeah. No. Yes.
It's with Leslie Nielsen. It's the same. There's a TV show that the same people did Airplane. And so every episode would start with this really famous person. And then they would kill him off before the credits. Yes, exactly. Every episode. Yes.
That's much better.
It was a TV show that led to the Naked Gun series.
Exactly. They're very funny. Every episode ends. And all of us here are old enough to remember the 70s crime dramas, but you know, every episode would end with them frozen in space. Like, they would end with them frozen, but they wouldn't actually freeze the picture. So they'd be sitting, like, holding a cup of coffee halfway to their mouth frozen, and then you would see people moving in the background.
Or like a dog running and, like, jumping up on a table, or everybody's in frozen in position. It's so funny.
And the TV show had Leslie Nielsen. I think he was the only one that was in the movies, though, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, if you could get those old TV shows, they're so funny. They're just...
The thing is, Police Squad was so ahead of its time, mm-hmm. that it failed in its first season because you had to pay attention, because there were so many visual jokes in that show, mm-hmm. that you couldn't just look away and listen to the dialogue, because it's all a visual, all visual jokes. And there are visual jokes that would happen off into the background that if you only watch the main characters, sometimes you would miss things that are like just off to the side that, if you miss that, you miss some of the jokes. So, and I think some people didn't get it. Whereas like Airplane, I mean, most people, you're sitting in a movie theater, you can't. You can't help but see what's going on. But on TV, it was a little bit more difficult, and I think that's why it didn't work. But I was a huge fan, and I saw every episode of that thing, and I was really disappointed when they canceled it.
Yeah, and the other brilliant thing about it was Leslie Nielsen played it straight, and I don't remember him doing anything slapsticky like he did in Naked Gun. I mean, he played it completely straight, and there was just all those bizarre things going around him.
Right. In fact, it was ridiculously straight. That's what made it funny. It was like his character in Airplane. He played a super serious guy.
It makes you wonder about that particular actor, how he did that. I couldn't keep a straight face when all that craziness was going on. But when you talk about famous people playing there was an episode, I think it was Rizzoli and Niles, where Jamie Barber, the guy on Battlestar Galactica, came in and played a character, and my first thought was, please don't be the bad guy.
Was he?
No, ended up not, but it was like a weird deflection, because you're right, because when you see just even an inkling of some characters you somewhat recognize, you know that they paid money for that actor, because that actor will turn out to be the one.
Yeah, the most obvious one.
Or the great foil, you never know.
Sometimes Law and Order. If you're watching Law and Order and it's a famous actor, you're like, yep, they did it, because they want to keep them all the way through the trial.
They're paying big bucks to keep them on the show, so might as well make them the villain.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for listening. And if you have a question you want to ask us, send us a note either by email at weckpodcast@gmail.com or through Twitter or through Facebook.
Or if you'd like to share who your favorite book
yes.
is.
Please, we want to know. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in. We'd love to get your feedback on this week's episode. You can follow us by using the Twitter handle at @WECPodcast. That's WEC with two Ks. Like us on our Facebook page by searching for the keyword WEC, or you can email us at WECPodcast@gmail.com. Bye for now.